Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home.
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. Hey, let him play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another edition of The Standard is the Standard, the Behind the Steel Curtain flagship podcast. With me, as always, is Lance Williams down on the West Coast. Lance, how's it going tonight?
How are you, sir? How are you?
I'm good. We have a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about the Steelers, I would say, improbable victory over the Arizona Cardinals in Week 6. I want to talk to you a little bit about Brandon Boykin in the secondary, especially after the injury report got released today. We're going to talk plenty about the Kansas City Chiefs and preview the upcoming game in Week 7 at Arrowhead Stadium. We're going to give you predictions and a whole lot more, so make sure you stay dialed in for at least this hour of sound. And if you want to call in, you can. 347-850-8581. Again, it's 347-850-8581. Lance, I haven't spoken to you since last Wednesday when we both picked the Cardinals, and the Steelers shocked the world in very uncommon fashion behind Landry Jones. What were your thoughts on that game in Week 5 and the Steelers winning that game that no one really expected them to win without Ben Roethlisberger?
Before I answer that question, Jeff, I want to apologize to listeners who heard that caller at the end of the show. Although it was funny, it was really inappropriate, and hopefully
yeah.
The subject of BBCs will not come up on any future programs. So I apologize if you were listening to that in your car and your wife heard it or your kids were in the car. I mean, it was funny as it happened, but it was definitely inappropriate. And if you're listening,
yeah,
who called last week, I don't remember your name. At least talk about chicks. At least. at least talk about chicks if you want to call in and say something very inappropriate. But anytime Landry Jones leads you to victory, I don't know what a better word for improbable is, but it's a capital improbable. You know, I thought they were going to get hammered, but it turned out, and using a cliche that leopard can't change his spots in, Carson Palmer, when he plays the Steelers, tends to become Carson Palmer, and he makes bad mistakes. You know, but that defense, again, bowed up. And this team is just finding different ways to win every single week. And that's a reflection of its coaching staff and the veteran leadership in that locker room. They're finding a way. And we talked about it last week that you want to get to the Cincinnati game, two games behind. You beat Cincinnati, and then it's a one-game race, and then it's on and popping. So I think the Steelers are, you know, trudging along to that goal and to that end.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think that the ultimate goal of keeping pace with Cincinnati is paramount. But at the same time, as the Steelers just want to get into they just want to get a seat in the dance. You know what I mean? They just want to take it to the dance, seat at the table, whatever you want to call it. And that's what the playoffs. And that was a huge win for them. I've always felt that in the course of the season, there's going to be a few games where you're going to have to steal one. You know, a game that you're not supposed to win, that no one is picking you to win, and whether it's on the road or even whether it's at home, you know, you might have to go out, you might have to go in, and you might have to you have to steal a win. And I think they did just that. Now, I did want to talk about the defense because I think this game was won by the defense. You held a team that was averaging over 30 points a game to 13 points, and that wasn't all, you know, by luck and happenstance. The Cardinals shot themselves in the foot 20, don't get me wrong. I mean, they were really, really bad in terms of penalties that drove them outside of field goal range. They were certainly issues with they missed a field goal that would have put at least 3 points on the board, and then we know, well, Carson Palmer was Carson Palmer. What I like about this defense is, though, is pretty simple, actually. It's always someone different. And I spoke about this on our post-game show, the Steelers' final score with Chris Carter. And I said, you know, you think back to even in week two where they're in the San Francisco, it's Ryan Shazier. He's making all those plays, sacking the quarterback, causing fumbles. Week three in St. Louis, Will Allen comes up with a big interception. Then you go to San Diego, and you have Baltimore. You have Ross Cockrell, who had the interception and the fumble recovery. San Diego on Monday night, it's Antoine Blake with a pick six. And then you have it's always someone new. And now in the last game, it was Mike Mitchell. It was Lawrence Timmons. It's always someone new with this defense. Do you think that this is kind of like a string of good luck with this defense, Lance, or do you think that this is like the MO for the defense moving forward?
No, it's two things that are happening. They're getting pressure and they're getting turnovers. And those are things that this whole defense was criticized for the last year or two. And I think with the pressure, whether it be by winning one-on-one matchups or teams
All right, Lance, we're having some technical difficulties with you, bud. We'll try to get a better connection here with you. I think what he was talking about, though, for those listening live or if you're listening on podcast, is that there's pressure. They're putting pressure on the quarterback, and they didn't get to Carson Palmer very often. They got to him once. Official sack totals were one. However, at the same time, you got to look at it and say, well, they also hit him, I want to say, 8 times. So they're getting to the quarterback. They're forcing someone, especially like Carson Palmer, where you get him off of his mark. And people might not realize what that means, you know, the mark. And when the quarterback drops back to pass, they're going to plant their back foot, and they're going to want to drive that football down the field. If you can make that quarterback move off of that point, think of Tom Brady. Tom Brady's one of the best in the business with it because he's not that mobile. People want to say Aaron Rodgers, but Aaron Rodgers is a very mobile quarterback. So when he drops back, he can put his foot in the ground. He can move around and still be super accurate. Tom Brady is not necessarily that way. And Carson Palmer is of that Tom Brady ilk of terms of you have to move him off his spot. And the Steelers did that enough to make some plays in the passing game. And so let's see if we cleared up that line with Lance. Lance, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. Something's going on.
All right, that's a little bit better. Go ahead with your thought.
I think when you get, and, you know, even if you're not getting sacks, you're getting hits and hurries, the turnovers come. And when both come, you know, you're going to get a very good defense. And the funny thing about their defensive performance, because I've had some people on my boards criticize the performance, is the defense that the Steelers played on.
Okay, we're losing you again, Lance. I think he's driving somewhere. It's something that if you want to call in, by all means, you can to help fill this sound. 347-850-8581. Again, that's 347-850-8581 to make your voice heard. The Pittsburgh Steelers are currently first in the National Football League in terms of turnover ratio. They've only given it away. I want to say 3 times, all interceptions. And they've taken the ball away. I want to say it's close to 12 or about that. I mean, they're doing a good job with the turnover ratio, and that's something that is definitely a calling card. Well, we hope it's a calling card for this football team. We hope it's not just like a 5-game stretch where you're really having some really good luck and some good bounces. One more time here. We'll try to get Lance back on the air and see if this connection's any better. Lance, can you hear me now? All right, well, you're still breaking up, buddy. You're still breaking up. So we have a caller, though. Let's get this caller on the air. Let's hear 314-705. You're on the air. Go ahead. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, hi, guys. I'm in St. Louis. My question is really around the secondary, and you know, obviously you can't see what's going on in practice, at least not here in St. Louis you can't, but I'm curious as to why Boykin isn't playing and why Blake is playing over him. I mean, is he just not getting it done in practice? What is the reason? He seems to have the measurables. I mean, he's got the right size to play that position. You know, to spend a mid-round draft pick on him, why isn't he playing?
Well, you know, that's a good question. It's actually something we were going to bring up later in the show, but it's okay. We can talk about it now. Boykin is kind of a head-scratcher when you think about what they gave up to get him. There's been a lot of conversation that, you know, if they would have known, they would have gotten a player like Ross Cockrell right when they were breaking down the NFL across the board was breaking down the rosters to the 53, that they probably wouldn't have made the trade for Boykin because they liked Cockrell even out of college when he left Duke. Nonetheless, in terms of Antoine Blake, he's a Mike Tomlin guy. He likes guys like Antoine Blake that kind of rise up, that, you know, are always around, that they're tough. And he fits that mold, but he certainly does have his deficiencies. I think here's what, in terms of my perspective, and I'll say this loosely because I'm not a coach or anything like that, and I'm not at practice every day, is that Boykin has experience. And that's something that, you know, Cockrell didn't have. And so when I see a player that's played for the Philadelphia Eagles, even though it's sparingly as a nickel cornerback mainly, and then all of a sudden I see Ross Cockrell, who really didn't play at all as a rookie for the Buffalo Bills, gets released and picked up by Pittsburgh, and he's playing over Boykin. And that tells me there's something going on. And what is that? Well, no one really knows, because that's between Mike Tomlin, Keith Butler, Carnell Lake, all those coaches that are involved in those decisions. But you have to look at practice, and there must be something to practice. I am not of the kind of – I'm not in that group that thinks it has anything to do with the playing, the snap counts, the percentages and all that stuff, because there are a lot of people – that thinks that has something to do with it, because obviously it's a conditional draft pick, the trade that was made. But that's just my personal feeling. Lance, what do you think about this?
Let me give you some numbers too that will make it even more of a head-scratcher. On Pro Football Focus, he's rated Blake the third worst corner in the National Football League for cornerbacks that have played 50% of the snaps. He's been targeted 45 times, given up 32 catches for a completion, or a catch percentage of 71.7. Quarterbacks have a 97.2 rating or better against him. And in three games, quarterback rating against Blake has been 100 or better. That suggests that it isn't about production. Sure, he had the pick six, but on a snap-in, snap-out basis, you can't say he should be starting, or you can definitely say he isn't playing well enough to not warrant someone else getting a sniff. So, you know, Boykin not playing at all, I don't get it. And that's one of those things that not being in the facility, not being at practice, not even being in those meeting rooms, it's hard to discern why the choice hasn't been made, or that Boykin hasn't even been given a sniff. I mean, he hasn't played a defensive snap since St. Louis. They've given away. Blake was getting killed by John Brown in Arizona. I mean, you'd have to figure Boykin should be able to get in a hint at some point. So it's going to remain a head scratcher. And one, I don't think the coaching staff can defend from a production standpoint.
Yeah, and then in some news on that for the caller, I didn't get your name, I apologize, is that Antoine Blake actually has, I want to say, a broken thumb. Now, that wasn't released by Tomlin in his press conference on Tuesday, but reports from practice today were that Antoine Blake had a cast on his thumb, and that's why he did not practice. Therefore, with Cortez Allen being a limited participant, Antoine Blake being out, Brandon Boykin's getting practice snaps, so this is a perfect opportunity for him to prove himself. So the only thing that I could say to add on to what Lance already said with all those statistics about him being Antoine Blake being a very mediocre cornerback is that if he doesn't see playing time now, then it has to be a practice issue. He must not be performing well enough to practice to be getting playing time, because he's going to be getting practice snaps at this point with Cortez Allen being limited and with Antoine Blake being out. So we'll see how things play out this Sunday in Kansas City. I'm expecting to see Brandon Boykin actually make his debut as a cornerback since St. Louis for the Steelers. Do you have anything else before we let you go?
No, I was at the game here in St. Louis, and I'm going to the game at Arrowhead this weekend. I'm looking forward to seeing him play. I'd like to see him get an opportunity. Again, like you said, nobody's there in the locker room. I don't get it. I mean, Blake's just not very good, and I can't believe Boykin's not better.
Well, yeah, it's like Lance said, it's a head scratcher. So hopefully you get to see him when you go up to Arrowhead. Make sure you wear that black and gold proud and cheer them on to victory, all right?
You know it. I'll be there.
All right. Thanks for calling. We appreciate it. All right, well, Lance, let's talk about Brandon Boykin a little bit, because it is really, really confusing to me. Even if you were just a casual fan and you hear about the trade, you hear about what they're giving up, you hear about the pedigree, which is something that you talk about a lot. What was it? You always say the three P's. What is pay, pedigree, and
pay,
play?
Pay, pedigree, and performance. Pay, pedigree,
performance.
And performance.
Right. So he's got the pay. He's got the pay.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have any performance for the Steelers. I mean, something's going on here. I can't believe it's happening. They're not paying for that. John Brown's running routes, right? He's not Chris Johnson. So I'd rather have an arrow on his ability to cover as opposed to tackle. But, I mean, it's an absolute head scratcher. But they're 4-2. So right now, I'm not costing them. He helped them win a game against San Diego. You know, now Boykin seems like he may get his chance. Now Cortez Allen may play, because if you throw out a four wide receiver set, you know, you can't put a safety in a one-on-one matchup. Fear of him getting roasted. So you may even see Cortez Allen if Kansas City decides to put four wide receivers. So, you know, Boykin will probably get his chance. The NFL is all about taking advantage of the chance that you get. But what I was trying to make you ask me earlier about defense is that the type of defense you see the Steelers play or the Saw Steelers play on Sunday is what defense is going to look like in some cases in the National Football League. Defenses are going to give up a bunch of yards, but it's about blowing up in the red zone. In the NFL, it's slanted towards offense now. It's hard to be a Denver-like defense unless you have first-rounders and elite players sprinkled all over the football field. And most teams just aren't going to be that deep on that side of the ball. So most defenses are going to give up a bunch of yards. It's just about limiting guys and preventing touchdowns in the red zone. That's what defense is in the National Football League. And you mix that in with some turnovers, and you can win a Super Bowl with it.
No, you're right. You're right. And the Steelers' defense has been very opportunistic so far throughout the first six games of the regular season, whether it's forced fumbles, whether it's interceptions. I mean, that Lawrence Timmons interception, that was pretty impressive, I got to say. I mean, a deflected pass like that, one-handed catch to be able to keep your hand underneath it as you play. It was a shame they couldn't turn that into points. However, it was they're very opportunistic. So Boykin, I think personally we're going to see him on the field more in Kansas City, especially because I don't think Blake's going to be playing much, if at all. If for some reason Cortez Allen was going to see time over Boykin, then I think it's time that you sound the alarm and say, look, this experiment's over. It's just not going to happen. Okay, so let's move on from Boykin. We thank the caller for calling in. If anyone else wants to, they can. 347-850-8581. That's 347-850-8581. Be a part of the show. Call in. We'll get you on the air. You can talk about whatever you want to talk about, Pittsburgh Steelers related. Now, let's shift our attention to the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, they're a 1-5 team. I think most people would say, though, that they're not a genuinely bad football team. They have a great defense. They are missing their best player, and that best player is Jamaal Charles, without a doubt. And so you know, before we get to that, we do have a caller here. Let's get this caller on the air before we go into the Kansas City Chiefs discussion. 732-266, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Good evening. It's Vito Manco from New Jersey. How are you?
Oh, good. How you doing, Vito? What's up?
How's everything? I guess somebody got angry at me because I was bashing Michael Vick last week when I was talking about the victory of the Steelers. I mean, am I wrong to get upset at a veteran quarterback for playing so poorly? I mean, you tell me. I mean, think about
it. You're not wrong at all. Everyone can be criticized.
If the backup doesn't come in, Landry Jones, we don't win that game, right? We probably lose that game. And the defense is doing a great job holding the score close because they realize that the offense can't score points, which is terrible, right? I mean, you got a high-powered offense, you got all these great weapons, but you got a quarterback who has an arm that's afraid to throw the ball because he doesn't trust himself. He has no confidence. So, unfortunately, he got hurt. Look at the difference when the young guy comes in, how he just threw the ball around, he connected, and all of a sudden, it's a different ball game.
You're right. Go ahead, man.
In any walk of life, confidence is key to having success, and confidence is contagious. And you saw both things happen in the game. They caught a rhythm. Landry Jones came out confident, made a couple of plays. They caught a rhythm, and it looked like the entire offense, the football team, the city of Pittsburgh, everybody exhaled, and they went out and won a football game. And you wouldn't have had that performance because, Mike Vick, although I think Mike Vick is absolutely the better player, definitely player better than the guy that's only thrown the ball 12 times in his career, not knowing the offense and not having a lot of confidence almost makes those guys the same player. So, confidence is everything. And the eye in the sky doesn't lie. Mike Vick was not playing good football. The offense was struggling. And it just happened that he got hurt and it kind of worked itself out that this isn't really a hard decision for the coaching staff this week. He's hurt. Landry plays.
Yeah, and Vito, to kind of piggyback what Lance said, I mean, your criticism of Michael Vick is 100% valid. I mean, if people want to give you a hard time for being rough on Vick, well, they're not watching the same football games because, honestly, for three quarters against San Diego and for a half against the Cardinals, he was atrocious. I mean, there's no other way to say it. He was one of the I've watched a lot of football. He was one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen play at the National Football League level, and it's because he was so uncomfortable. Michael Vick's not used to having multiple reads in an offense and having to have all those pre-snap looks, and that's one of the things that you notice. When Landry Jones came into the game, immediately Todd Haley said, "I finally have my whole playbook to my disposal now," and he saw, if you watch closely, Landry Jones is calling out protections before the snap. He's communicating with the receivers, with the running backs, with the line. He's doing things that Ben Roethlisberger did when he was in there, and it's something that Michael Vick never did. It's not a cut on Michael Vick. He didn't know it. So it's one of those issues where, honestly, Vick, he did his job. And I talked about this after the game in our post-game show. He did his job, and that was he didn't lose games for the Steelers. And what I mean by that is that he went out against the Rams, even in the second half, and he didn't throw an interception. He didn't make that big mistake, the fumble. Should he have had some interceptions? Sure, but it didn't happen. And so Vic did his job. Landry Jones is probably going to have the job of winning one more game before Ben Roethlisberger returns. But, no, I think that your criticism of Vic and the way that he played, although it might not be valid in terms of him as an athlete and him as a quarterback, in this system, and with the expectations on this team, 100% valid, in my opinion.
Well, let me ask you this. In life, I don't know if you guys ever read the book Good to Great. In the book Good to Great, he says good is not good enough anymore in today's world. And if you look at sports as a whole, what happens to the guys that don't perform well year after year? Teams usually cut them. They don't need them, right? So if you're not an asset to the team, you become a liability. Why do we need to pay you? We don't need you. Teams want to get better. So the good thing about Michael Vick is he has great teammates around him. He doesn't have to do it all by himself. But there's no reason why he can't make any dink and dunk know, set up play action. I mean, I understand why he can't do that. I mean, he had 10 days of practice the week before. I mean, he practiced up to this game. So I just don't understand why he was so nervous. I mean, he just played like he didn't know what he was doing, and you could see it in his face. I mean, enough for me on Vic. I mean, I don't want to beat him up anymore. I mean, you know, he did what he did, and, you know, like you said, yes, we didn't lose the game because, you know, he was relieved by Jones. So it is what it is, but I guess I can't feel bad for the guy because he's a veteran. He's getting paid to do his job. So,
yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. And I think that when I look at the situation and I look at Michael Vick as a quarterback and his whole career, I look at when he was in Atlanta when he was drafted. When he started playing, I mean, he had worked on there for a little bit, but he was the guy. Like, it was only him. And he had to make plays to win games, and they win and won and lost with Michael Vick. And then I look at when he obviously had the issues that landed him in prison for a long time. He comes back and he's with Philadelphia. No one had high expectations on him there. He went out and played well, got some money, and then he got cut for Sanchez, I believe. And then he goes up to the Jets, doesn't play well on a really bad team, but now he comes to Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh would maybe be the first and only time that he's on a football team where they're saying, look, man, we have a roster that is Super Bowl caliber, and you can't mess this up for us just because our starting quarterback is going to be out for 4 weeks. And believe it or not, for a player even as experienced as Vic, in my personal opinion and in my coaching experience, for someone like that, it's very, very difficult, very, very difficult to transition from one to the other. Does that make sense? Because he's now having this weight of this team, like Antonio Brown and Martavis Bryant when he came back at the end, Le'Veon Bell and his defense, James Harrison, at the end of his career, that's some pressure. And I don't think he handled the pressure that well, but you're right. If you're not improving in this day and age in every business, you're basically becoming stagnant, and therefore you're not useful anymore. And that could be what's happening with Michael Vick with the hamstring injury. He could basically be phased out of the equation once Ben Roethlisberger comes back either this week or next week. It's very possible.
Good stuff.
So, well, anyways, Gio, we thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it as always. Hope you keep calling back. Thanks a lot. We do have another caller here. Let's see if we can get this individual on the air. 727-333. Go ahead, you're on with Jeff and Lance.
Hey, this is Aaron from Newcastle.
Hey, what's up, Aaron? How's it going?
Listen, Michael Vick now is the same type of athlete after prison that Mike Tyson was after his prison stint. Not the same guy. He's not even close to being the same guy. He will never be the same guy. But my bigger concern with this week in the NFL was what we saw on the NFL Network. I pay extra to have that channel, and I'm watching it with my kids. Have you guys talked about this yet, the background shots that they had during the NFL interview with Pac-Man Jones? Did you see any of that?
I heard about that. I didn't see it, but I heard about it.
They showed naked players, and it wasn't a quick flash or something like that. I mean, I got four kids in my house. Two of them are neighbors' kids, and they're over here watching because I have the NFL Network. They do not. And I'm paying dearly for this per month. And I was so disappointed, not only that the kids saw that, but the players in the background were white. I wanted them to see a big black penis like James Harrison.
All right, there we go. Thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it. Yes, thank you. I thought I recognized that voice. Click on the trigger that time. Hey, no problem.
When you're
running a live show, you got to do. I thought I recognized that guy's voice, so I was ready for that. And then when he started going across the wire, I was like, this is not going to end well.
Hey, CC, help us out, baby. Help us out, CC. You got to get that number written down. Help us out, baby.
Yeah, I think I have that number now, actually. Anyways, let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. We talked a lot about Michael Vick. We talked a lot about Landry Jones. Talked a lot about the secondary and the opportunistic Steelers defense. Let's talk about the Chiefs. Now, they're 1-5. They're certainly not a bad football team. They don't have Jamaal Charles. That's a big loss for them. But still, they have playmakers. But they're also dealing with another injury bug. Obviously, their best wide receiver and Alex Smith's favorite target, and Jeremy Maclin, is also out with a concussion. They don't know whether he'll be playing Sunday. He's going through the protocol of the NFL, and he did not practice today. So with that said, Lance, just before we get into the keys on offense and defense, what is your general gist of this game, your feelings towards this game? And let's be honest, we're going to have almost like two predictions and two different generalizations of this game based on the fact that, well, could Ben Roethlisberger be the quarterback or would Landry Jones be the quarterback? What do you think?
Yeah, I think from a defensive perspective, hearing that Macklin may be out really kind of changes how I think about the game. I mean, when you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, they weren't really a dynamic push-it-down-the-field team anyway with Macklin, although they did try to stretch the field somewhat with Kelce and Macklin. Macklin, I think, had maybe 10 plays of 20 yards or more. He was definitely their big play threat, but it's a horizontal offense. We saw it last year in Pittsburgh. They try to stretch you laterally and kind of attack you horizontally. So when you take out Macklin, I think it makes it very difficult to do that because when you remove the vertical threat, it puts more people close to the line of scrimmage. And with Jamaal Charles out and the two backs being Sharkhandrick West and Nile Davis, I don't know if you fear either one of those guys. So I think the Steelers can be creative in what they try to do in trying to win Travis Kelce, who I think is now, with Macklin out, probably their most dynamic offensive player. And we've seen that the Steelers have had a lot of issues in dealing with tight ends. According to Pro Football Outsiders, they're ranked fourth worst in the National Football League, I believe, in trying to defend tight ends. Also, Travis Kelce himself is the number four rated tight end. We see what happened when they faced Gronk, the number one rated tight end, with Darius Green, the number three rated tight end. We've seen that they've had some difficulties, but I think they will be able to mitigate some of those issues because I don't think they have to. They may not have to account for Macklin in this game. So I think from a defensive perspective, I think the Steelers will really be able to handle what Kansas City tries to do from an offensive perspective. You know, some of the matchups that I had going into the game would have been Macklin versus Blake, but it looks like neither player may not play, so that matchup is erased. Still a key matchup from the passing game perspective is the inside linebackers versus Kelce. Who knows if Shazier will play? That's always a question mark week in, week out. In the running game, I think they'll definitely be able to handle West and Nile Davis. And I think the Steelers will really be able to get after that offensive line. They've given up 24 sacks, which I think is second worst in the National Football League. And if any of you guys watched the game last week when they played the Minnesota Vikings, Sharrif Floyd really got after that group. And I think Tuitt and Hayward are really going to do some damage going after the center and both guards on that offensive line. And I think the Steelers are playing a team that I think that they can dominate from a defensive perspective.
Yeah, and from an offensive perspective, I wanted to get your kind of thoughts on everyone's talking about it. We might as well at the same time, and that is the quarterback situation for the Steelers. Okay, looking at this from an offensive standpoint for the Steelers against the very stout defense of the Kansas City Chiefs with Houston and Ali and all those, and Poe, who's dealing with an ankle injury. He sat out the last game, actually. Let's say you're Mike Tomlin, okay, and you have this situation. I think it's safe to say Michael Vick is not going to play this week. He declared himself probably out with the slight hamstring pull. So you've got Landry Jones is healthy. You know his limitations. However, he did see a lot of promise when he got in there with the starters in the second half of last week. Then you got Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger is practicing fully. He was a limited participant today. I think that's their way of just still easing him into this process. What do you need to see or hear from Roethlisberger himself or the medical staff? That's what I'm trying to ask is, what do you need to hear before you say, you know what, number seven's back, we're playing him this Sunday?
He has to tell me that he can protect himself, that he has pocket mobility, and he has the ability to escape the pocket as well, especially given that you're starting a new left tackle and building a waiver. So he has to show me and tell me and demonstrate to me that he's fully healthy and that he can protect himself. If he can do both of those things, and I see him moving like he did prior to the St. Louis game, I'll probably go ahead and start him.
Okay. All right. I think it's – I would want to hear from the medical staff, especially, and say, you know, what's going on with the you know, what's going on with the knee at this stage, and where he is from a health standpoint, meaning how far the ligament has healed. Could he cause any major damage if he goes out there a little bit earlier than expected? That would be something that I would certainly look for when I was making this. It's a big decision. So I personally, if Ben Roethlisberger was a full participant in practice today, I would think that he was going to play on Sunday, personally. There's no inside information there. That's just my gut feeling. When I saw that he was a limited participant today and Landry Jones was basically the guy, I don't think that he's going to play. Now, the next question that gets brought up is, what do you do at your backup position? So, Michael Vick, let's say he's out. If he sat out of practice today, he could still come back, but let's just be honest, I don't think it's going to happen. So, let's say Michael Vick is out of the rotation. So now you have either Tyler Murphy from the practice squad, who gets elevated to the 53-man roster to be the emergency backup quarterback, or you dress Ben Roethlisberger and have him ready as an emergency quarterback. What would you do if that's your call and that's the situation you're in?
Well, to your point about the limited snaps, Ben got limited snaps. You're right. He's probably not going to start because Landry Jones is getting the bulk of the snaps and they're trying to get him ready. If he's a full participant, he's going to play because given Landry Jones' inexperience, he needs to get some reps to get ready to play on the road in a hostile environment against a good defense in Kansas City. He would have to get all the reps, in fact. So if it's reported that Ben got anything more than limited, he's going. In terms of who's the backup, until they rule Mike Vick out, you know, if he's questionable on the injury report, he's going to be the backup. And they just won't roll him out. He'll just be the backup guy. I don't think they'll dress Ben as the backup. I don't think they'll do that. And I don't think they're going to elevate a guy off the practice squad. I think they're just going to have Mike Vick as the two.
Well, you know what they might be better off doing? And let's be honest, and if they have Landry Jones as their quarterback and he goes down with an injury, just put Le'Veon Bell back there and run the Wildcat. Just let's be honest. I mean, Michael Vick is Michael Vick's a sitting duck, and he can't throw the ball anyway. So put Le'Veon Bell back there and say, you know what, take it. Put D'Angelo Williams next to him, run that little read option. I'm sure they have to be thinking about something. They have to have something in place if that's the case. So it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this week plays out in terms of the injury report, in terms of the practice report, who gets the most snaps, all that good stuff. It's been a while since we've had this many injuries to keep track of and really meaningful injuries in terms of how they handle the specific game situations. Now let's talk about keys to the game. The Kansas City Chiefs, they are actually home underdogs. The early line is 2. They're saying the Steelers are giving 2 points. Now, I will say this. If Ben Roethlisberger, I'll ask you this, I think it will. I think if Ben Roethlisberger, if they decide that they're going to play him, those odds are going to change dramatically. Do you agree, or do you think they would still be hesitant to jump him to, like, maybe 4 or 5 if Ben Roethlisberger is playing because he's been out for so long?
If they're a 2-point favorite with Landry Jones being the starter and 3 to 4 points if Ben comes back as the starter, that line is pushed up to about 5, you know, anywhere between 5 and 6.5. Because if Ben comes back, they're going to blow Kansas City out. That's a blowout. If Ben comes back, they blow Kansas City out. Kansas City won't be able to score enough. Even if Ben is rusty coming back, they'll still generate enough offense now that the Steelers' place kicker has become the special teams player of the week. Watch out, Sweetum. Watch out, Sam. Watch out.
Yeah, that's definitely a conversation to have in terms of Boswell. I'm going to wait and see if he does a few more weeks. We have a caller here. Hopefully this is an appropriate call. 832-256, we're on with Jeff and Lance. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. This is Melvin. I live in Dallas. You don't have to worry about me doing anything idiotic like that guy before me. I agree with Lance. I think that our defense, if they play just half as good as they played against the top-rated, high-scoring offense in the Cardinals, and we're getting ready to play check down Alex without a Jamal Charles, I think we'll be fine defensively. Now, my only thing with Ben, I think with Ben in between a rock and a hard place, the Kansas City front seven, they're not as good as the Rams, but they are close to the Rams front seven. And what my concern is, we got Beecham out on the left tackle. You know, Cody Wallace has been serviceable. Now, if you get Ben in there, you know, Ben may physically be able to go, but mentally, is he ready to go? With bodies falling down all around him, that's one. Then two, if you say, okay, let's not play Ben, let's go ahead and play Landry Jones. Landry Jones gets in there, does a serviceable job, we win. Now, our first game back, Ben plays the Bengals, which at that point, we may be talking about an undefeated Bengals team and the Steelers, you know, at 5-2. So, I mean, it's a very complicated situation as far as Ben is concerned, because we both know Ben wants to play. He's, you know, that's just the guy he is. But is he going to be mentally ready to play? And you got pass rushers that are going to be bringing it. So that's my thought on that situation.
Point caller, you know, with their front seven, if it were me, I'd err on the side of caution. I'd get Landry Jones prepared and not play Ben till the Cincinnati game. Because even if you lose the Kansas City game and you go into the Bengals game with a healthy Ben, you've got a great opportunity to win that game. But it's sort of like what Jeff said earlier in the show. You're just trying to get to the dance. You may not win the division because Cincinnati's gotten out if you lose and they're three games up, and you might be chasing Cincinnati all year just because they had a fantastic start. You may not catch them. So what? Just get a wild card. I'll guarantee you, no team wants to face a healthy Steeler team going into the playoffs with that offense. Nobody wanted to see that. So it's just about staying afloat to just get an invitation to the dance. You don't necessarily have to win a division, but you just got to get to the dance. So I think they're going to be patient with it and not play Ben against Kansas City.
Yeah, Lance, I agree with you, but you know, with the caller's question, it's a difficult situation. I don't know if you look at the history of when Ben Roethlisberger has been out for a significant period of time, and when he returns, his first game back is usually not that good. And the one that sticks out of my mind for some reason was, I think it was 2011. It was when he had that high ankle sprain, and he came back on Monday Night Football in San Francisco, and he was a sitting duck. I mean, he literally got beat up that game. They lost that game. That was when the power went out at Candlestick Park. I'm sure you remember that, Lance. But
I was there.
Yeah. It's one of those situations where you have to say, if he's healthy enough, I'm not going to hold him out because their front seven is really good. Because guess who's waiting the next week? Another really good front seven in the Cincinnati Bengals. He's going to have, if he can prove that he can protect himself, if he can prove that he can go out there and he can get the job done, that he's going to be out there. And I think that Todd Haley, in this whole grand scheme of things, is being forgotten and sometimes overlooked in the fact that if that's the case, the Steelers have a skill set at wide receiver that they can still live with a short pass and they can thrive with a short pass. And people don't think that Haley's going to have a role in this. Even with Landry Jones, if he's a quarterback, they're going to try to get the ball out before they can even get to him. I think that's going to play. The game plan heading into this game is going to be huge. But to answer the caller's question, I don't think that Ben plays this week. As much as I would say that I'd like him to, and, you know, he said after practice today it's going to be a coach's decision, I think the coaches are going to err on the side of caution, and I think it's going to be Landry Jones' job.
Not to bring up any omens, but I remember the last time we played in Kansas City, Ben got hurt. That was when he fell and had that rib. I think it was like his rib or his shoulder or something. I remember that like it was yesterday. Because I always think to myself, why do the Steelers always have to play in Kansas City? I can't remember the last time Kansas City played in Pittsburgh.
Last year was the first time in years that Kansas City came to Pittsburgh. But typically you're right. It's always out in Kansas City.
Well, I love the show, guys. I'm going to let y'all have it. I'll just keep listening.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Hey, Jeff.
All right, Lance, let's talk.
Another,
yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me give you another example of Ben coming back after being kind of banged up and having a terrible performance, and I happen to be a witness at that game as well. The concussion game in Oakland, when he threw the interception to Nnamdi Asamoah, they got beat at the Oakland Coliseum. You know, he had the concussion the week prior, and there was all this rankling and talk about whether Ben was going to play that Sunday because of the concussion. This was pre-concussion protocol time. And he came back and he was seeing triple and couldn't pull the trigger, and they got beat smithereens, and he had a terrible game. So there are some concerns, you know, about that with injury, how he's going to perform. But I think they're in a tough spot with it. But I agree with you, Jeff. I don't think we're going to see Ben in Kansas City on Sunday.
Yeah. So, that always sticks in the back of my mind. I don't know why. Ben's been banged up enough in his time with the team that if you follow this team, you remember those games where he comes back, and sometimes it's just ugly. Now, granted, he's never had the offensive weapons that he has now. He's never had a running back that's as dynamic as he has now. And you hope that the offensive line, because as we were texting during the Arizona game, the offensive line at times was really letting Michael Vick down. And not only Michael Vick, the team, and their failures to get those third and ones, second and ones, those conversions that are just so huge on moving the chains, keeping a drive going, possessing the football, they just weren't getting it done, period. And that was definitely disheartening. But let's talk about some keys, Lance. I want you to go first. Defensively, how are the Steelers? Give me, I don't know, 1, 2, 3. I don't care how many you give me. Well, what are the Steelers going to do defensively that's going to really harass the Kansas City Chiefs offense?
I think you're going to see the Steelers really be able to get pressure with four, and I think you're going to see them bracket Kelce much of the time. And if Macklin doesn't play, I think you're going to see them play the receivers one-on-one on the outside and sort of dare Alex Smith to beat them that way, but definitely take out Kelce. And I think you're going to see them stuff the running game. I think they're going to play really well against Kansas City. They're not good up front. So I think because of that, they'll control the running game, in turn get after Alex Smith, and really force Alex Smith and some of the receivers, if Macklin is out, to beat them with the vertical passing game and really try to limit Kelce by bracketing them. So I think the Steelers are going to play well defensively. I think the bigger questions, and I'm interested in what you got to say, Jeff, on the offensive side of the ball, now that that offensive line is down two starters.
Well, I think that offensively, if I'm going to give you my keys to success, it's not going to be any different, I don't think, if Landry Jones or Ben Roethlisberger is in there. They're going to want to get the ball out of their hands quickly. And that's something that Landry Jones did prove that he is capable of doing against the Cardinals. The Cardinals' defense is no slouch. Now, granted, they're not, you know, a top 10 unit. They're probably right around the middle of the pack, but they have good players, especially a really good secondary. I think that with the offensive line, Villanueva is going to be getting help for the majority of the rest of the season, I would guess. Keith Miller and Matt Spaeth, they're going to be over top of him. They're going to help off the edge to protect the blind side of the quarterback. But other than that, I mean, Cody Wallace has been in there, and I don't think that's going to change much what he does or what they do with him in the lineup. I think that offensively, let Landry Jones read the defense. He proved that he can do that in Arizona. He made a lot. I was really impressed. I think that there's really only a few times in my life that I can think of an occasion where a new player would come into the game and it literally you could see it change. And I honestly felt that that's exactly what happened. When Landry Jones stepped onto the field, that Todd Haley said, "Oh, thank the Lord, I now have my playbook back." And they moved the ball at will on the Arizona Cardinals defense, like I said, which is pretty stout. The Kansas City Chiefs get after the quarterback almost better than anyone, and I think that they have the leading sack getter on their team, don't they, Lance? The guy that's leading the league in sacks? Correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm not sure, but a hell of a player, if he's not, Evan Haley, Ali, excuse me, will be looking at Dillon's ways of licking their chops like, tastes like chicken.
Absolutely. So what are they going to do to really combat this? And you know, I'm looking up the sack leaders. I'm sorry, Carlos Dunlap of the Cincinnati Bengals is the sack leader with 6.5. I apologize. Nonetheless, Ben's going to get to see him in 2 weeks. For the Kansas City Chiefs, I look at it and say, if I'm approaching this defense, I'm using Le'Veon Bell to every ounce of his capability. And what I mean by that is that if you want to beat that pass rush, get him out on the edge, get him out of the backfield. A little-known stat that most kind of overlooked because they won the game the way that they did against the Cardinals was that was the first time in Le'Veon Bell's career, this is his third season in the NFL, that he has not even been targeted in the passing game once. He didn't even have a pass thrown his way. It was the first time. Very, very rare. They can't do that again, not against a team with a pass rush like this. I would really use the screen game in this, especially with Villanueva. Let those pass rushers get inside, dump it over the top, let Le'Veon Bell work his magic. Use the screens on the outside as well. Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant, I mean, if there's one player that could be called a freak, it's Martavis Bryant. That guy, I don't know what it is about him. He can fly, he can jump, he is physical. I tell you what, this team, this Pittsburgh Steelers offense, they might not have to do much, especially if their job, in terms of the way that you described the Steelers' defensive job against the Kansas City Chiefs offense, goes the way that we all expected to. They shouldn't have to do that much. Get him in the field goal range. Boswell makes the kicks. And I think that they could win a really low-scoring, ugly game, but I think that even with Landry Jones, they can still have success against this defense. I know that you think differently. What are your concerns about, other than Villanueva, other than Landry Jones, what are your ultimate concerns as they approach the Kansas City defense?
Well, those are big enough, and I'll just keep it on Landry Jones. Although Landry Jones was highly successful in the game against Arizona, there was a bit of a comfort zone from the fact that he was at home. Kansas City is a very tough place to play. That front seven is very good. It's going to be tough on the young guy. And from what I've seen from that offensive line, if Poe plays from Kansas City, the running game is dead. And I've been a little unsatisfied with the performance of the offensive line, particularly in the run game. It doesn't – with Cody Wallace, you can really see how that's impacting the run game. For the Steelers to win this game, which is another concern, I don't think they're going to be able to lean on a run game. I mean, this is a front seven that really did a great job at neutralizing Adrian Peterson the week before. I think they have to be thinking, let's stone this running game and put it in the hands of this guy that's thrown the ball 12 times. I think that's going to be daunting for Landry Jones to get accomplished on the road in Kansas City against a talented front seven, one that has two outstanding pass rushers. I think it's going to be a lot for Landry Jones to deal with and handle. And, again, I think the Steelers, to win this game, are going to have to lean on that defense. It's going to have to tackle well and get Landry Jones that offense some turnovers because it's going to look bad in some spots in the game for sure coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, and it's not going to be pretty. I mean, people that think that Landry Jones is just going to walk out on the field and duplicate the success he had last Sunday against the Cardinals by just snapping his fingers, it's just not going to happen. All right, I think it's enough talk about this stuff. Let's get down to predictions. I'll give you mine first. CC's not on with us right now, so we're not going to get his prediction right now. My prediction for this game is I think that the Steelers win this football game, and it's not going to be pretty. I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers are a team that is rolling. They're finding ways to win. They are confident. And I think that they believe that after Monday night's game in San Diego, they played horribly, yet were able to come out with a victory. I think that's their attitude in every single game. It doesn't matter how you start, it's how you finish. And I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to let the Kansas City Chiefs hang around a little bit. We might see if Landry Jones is the quarterback, which, as we both have said, we both expect that to be the case. You might see some real bad throws. I hope they're not interceptions. I don't think they will be, but just think about that Antonio Brown crossing route pass from Landry Jones that basically was early, hit him in the leg. The timing was off. You're going to see some of those issues, but I think eventually it'll settle in. In the second half, you'll see the Steelers pull away. I like the Steelers to win this game 24-13. I think eventually they're going to put up that many points, which is not a ton of points, but I think that they're going to really limit Alex Smith and that Kansas City Chiefs offense. So, again, I think that the Steelers win and move to 5-2 before they host the Cincinnati Bengals in week 8, 24-13. What do you think, Lance? What's your prediction?
I'm going to go the opposite way. I think Kansas City is going to win the game, and I think Kansas City is going to win the game largely because of Lance Jones. I think going on the road, playing up against an outstanding front seven that has the ability to stuff the run, I think it's going to be a little bit too much to ask for Landry Jones in his first start on the road in a big spot. I think he turns it over a couple of times, and I think Kansas City really is going to be able to get after the Steeler offense. So I'd like Kansas City to win this game 21-13. I think the Steelers score a touchdown and kick multiple field goals, but because of turnover or two, Kansas City uses that to their advantage to get some scores that they normally wouldn't because of great field position due to the turnover. So I like the Kansas City Chiefs to win the game 21-13. And a very highly, hotly contested, very close physical defensive ball game.
They're going to need turnovers, in my opinion, because I don't think that this Kansas City offense without Jamaal Charles is capable of driving the length of the field on a Steelers defense with any regularity. So, yeah, if it's going to happen, it's going to be the way you said it. If they're going to lose this game, the Steelers are going to have to basically gift wrap it for them and give them turnovers, and that's something that cannot happen regardless of who's the quarterback, whether that's Landry Jones or whether that is Ben Roethlisberger. All right, Lance, any last words before we call it a show? Lance, you there?
Yeah, sorry about that, Jeff. Steelers fans, ask yourself a couple of questions. Would you expect that the Steelers would be 4-2 if I told you Pouncey's out, Beecham's out, Shazier's out, and Big Ben is out. Martavis is suspended for 4 games. Le'Veon misses 2 games. Would you think that they would be sitting at 4-2? So if you have any complaints about the football team and clock management, they got lucky, they really should have lost, this is miraculous, you're just a hater. You're a hater. You're just a hater. Be happy. They're 4-2. They've overcome a season's worth of adversity in the first 6 games, and they're in the mix. And you could argue that they should be 5-1. This is a good football team. It's well coached, and it's a resilient bunch. Be happy. You could be cheering for Jacksonville. Keep that in perspective.
Hey, amen to that. Also, you could have to be a Ravens fan. They're 1-5. They're tied for the worst record in the National Football League, and I love it. Love every second of it. I live in Maryland. I'll take every chance. I wear all my Steelers gear wherever I can so I can rub it in their face that they're 1-5. And when they say, oh, well, we beat you, I'm like, hey, you can watch us in the playoffs this year if you'd like. And so there you go. That's a good way to end the show if you ask me. Thanks for the phone calls, for all the people that called in and took the time. Lance, as always, thank you for your time. We'll see after the Steelers play the Chiefs on Sunday for the Steelers' final score right after the game. It's a call-in show. Make sure you can call in, be a part of that. As always, check BehindTheSteelCurtain.com for all your Pittsburgh Steelers needs every day, early and often, as it's updated multiple times a day. We'll see you next week, same time, same place. Bye.